It's time to talk about the outdoors in South Alabama. Hunting, fishing, and getting outside along the Great Gulf Coast. It's time to take it outside with FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. With reports, stories, how-to information, and Dr. Bill's Marine Forecast. Here's Sean Sullivan and Mike Ward.
All right, here we go. Back together after weeks here. Captain Mike Ward, Sean Sullivan, good to have you on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors.
You've been a busy guy.
I've been a busy guy, yeah, yep, for sure. So it's good to get back here about this time of year when everything is going on.
Yep. Lots of things going on.
That's for sure.
You know, one thing that I did while you were doing your things, I did fish a king mackerel tournament out of Cocodrie, Louisiana.
Okay, well, that's where all the king mackerel are, right?
Yeah, there are just tons of them over there. I think we had 10 boats, and there was probably about 12 kings caught. So we have a great guest on here today. Maybe he can tell us where the king mackerel are, because they're not south of Dauphin Island. They're not south of Pensacola. They're not south of Louisiana. So I don't know where they're at.
Okay. Well,
they're hiding.
Yeah, I'm sure this man goes, oh, gosh, I got thrown into this. We'll talk about that. I tell you, I did go. We're going to get in trouble with our next guest because you were in Louisiana taking part in saltwater fishing.
Right.
I was in the state of Florida. Now, I was gone, one, to take my daughter to college. That was one of the weeks we had an encore show. And then the other, I was, you know what, I went scalloping over in Florida.
Awesome.
So we're both leaving the state. But we're back now.
Well, if they had scallops here, we'd go scalloping here, but there's none here.
Hey, so let me ask this question. So Colonel Scott Bannon, Director of Alabama Marine Resources in studio, when are y'all going to do something about having scallops here for me to go get?
So, well, one, thank you, and I'm glad to be here, and thank you for the setup, Captain Mike and Sean. But so we do have scallops here. People do fish for or shoot or gig stingrays, and they cut the wings out, and they make those into scallops. So I hear that they're really
good.
You're
right. I forgot about that, Scott.
So that opportunity is available to you here in Alabama. Yeah.
You know what? That's probably a better return. Like I was telling Mike earlier before you got in here, we got started this morning. It's got like 3 gallons worth, and I'm like, man, look at these. I'm back there on the tailgate of the truck here cleaning them, and then by the end of it, I'm like, that's not a whole bunch of meat.
The yield is relatively small, and
it's fun to do. It's relaxing.
It's about the trip. Just remember that it's about the trip. If it's about the food, go to the restaurant and let somebody have done the work for you.
That's right. It was a lot of fun. Good to have you. Good to have you in here.
It's good to be here.
So, lots to talk about. First thing is Mike's. Well, we'll get to Mike's problem later, but I have to do this. If you're in here, give us an update. Where are we on our on red snapper?
Okay, so red snapper fishing has gone up and down this year, Mike. I think you're aware of that we started very poorly with the weather, did not help us at all. And then the effort got to where it normally is for the summer, people taking the opportunity to go. So through the previous weekend, this weekend, I don't have the numbers for our chief science officer, Kevin Anson, who handles that part of the program, has been at the Gulf Council all week, and he likes to QAQC the numbers before we post it.
So what?
So, you know, just to make sure we're giving you the right
answers. QAQC, is that some French? What is that?
That's a sciency term. Don't ask me any more than that, because remember,
I thought you were speaking French, man.
The quality control of those numbers, the quality assurance and quality control, I think is the term. So through the previous weekend, we're at 471,944 pounds out of 659,654 pounds. So we're about 200,000 pounds left for the year. So this time of year, school's back in session.
It's what you talked about all the time.
You just sent yours to college. Yep. Everybody sent them to college. Friday night football's coming.
Kids playing ball.
Dove season's coming up. Greenfields need some work.
Alabama
and Auburn have been out there on the gridiron. So there is a lot of life-changing experiences that occur this month. So that effort's going to drop to a couple of thousand pounds a weekend, 10,000 pounds a weekend maybe. So we're fishing probably through the end of the year. Even Labor Day weekend is not a really big weekend. If the weather's nice, people will go.
Right.
And please do and report your fish through Snapper Check. But I think we're going to fish through the rest of the year without too much trouble. We're pretty close to it. So I think we're going to have a good season. Probably the number one complaint is they're hard to catch and they're small. And Mike, I don't know, I'm sure that may have been your experience.
That's my Mike's got better spots than me. That is, you're talking to me. Yes.
So they're and we know that. We know that going into the season. And remember, the overall numbers are good. There are lots of fish out there. Our good friend Dr. Sean Powers from the University of South Alabama gives us a great snapshot every year. I recently went on one of the research trips where we put the ROV over, watched a reef with thousands of fish, including triggerfish, amberjack. I mean, it was an amazing experience. I love watching that. And then we fish it, and you get a couple of bites, and you get a couple of small fish, and you say, well, we know they're there. We saw them.
Really? So they're there.
That is interesting.
Yeah. They are. And it's
well, our machines, depth finders, show that they're there.
Shows them all the way to about 50 feet. If you're in 100 feet of water, it's going to show them up to about 50 feet.
That's right.
It's, so they are there.
I always just say it's a bunch of when we don't get bit like that. I'm like, yeah, it's a bunch of ruby redlips. Must be small trigger fish. I make it, you know, that's why we're not catching.
You sell it however you want to sell it, but the fish are out there. So I will say this time of year, especially when you get into July, those water temperatures heat up, the oxygen levels do drop a little bit. And there was an article in AL.com this week. I was not able to read it yet, but there has been some discussion of the low oxygen zone off the coast of Alabama is pretty large this year. We're checking into that. There's some scientists doing some research. South Alabama has a drone, an underwater drone, that's going to be doing some water surveys. That it's autonomous. They'll launch it, and it's going to go collect all kinds of data. So we're going to know a lot more about that type of information here in the near future.
Because that's been, I mean, that's been a discussion about that dead zone out off the mouth of the Mississippi.
Correct.
For, gosh, a long time.
Years.
Yeah. So, but to hear it discussed here.
It's not good news.
No, it didn't.
It's not. It doesn't mean it's the end of the world. It's not killing things. It just makes things challenging. And so, again, you might get a tropical storm, a hurricane that comes in, churns that water up, and totally changes that dynamic, and maybe that goes away.
But, you know, I've seen that. It's been over in Louisiana for years. Mm-hmm. And then I see these hurricanes come through there and just wipe the land out. And that hypoxic water is still there.
It'll come back. So, it does.
Yeah. So I don't understand, you know, how to get rid of that bad water. And I contribute that, I think, to what our problem is on all these king mackerel terminals. There's just no kings out there right now. If they are, they're not biting. They're like the red snapper, maybe. They're there, but maybe they're not biting. I don't know. But I'm telling you.
King mackerel is a topic at the Gulf Council. This last week, I spent some time at the Gulf Council. It has come up because the catch rates are going down.
It's showing the same thing.
I hear that from the anglers. We don't see them. Our commercial anglers are having to fish differently and in different areas. And I don't think it's about the catch rates. I don't think it's been overfished. That's my argument.
I think Dr. Powers said the same thing, too.
There's not a lot of change in the commercial activity, recreational activity. You've never caught the recreational quota anyway, even when we raised the limit, because people don't want to keep a lot of kings. They just want to go fish for some kings. They're so much fun to catch. Something with the water, I think, this is Scott's little theory of the world, is there's some change. Is it the movement of bait fish? Is it water temperature? Is it any number of things that could be occurring that are just causing them to move in a different pattern than they historically had? A few of the commercial guys tell me they'll find them. They have to fish further out and, again, in areas that they didn't historically fish. A few years ago, every reef you went over, you could put a drift line out. You're probably going to get a king.
Yeah,
may not be a monster, but you're going to get something. And you don't see that now. So, and again, the catch rate numbers didn't go up, and they really didn't change much. They started going down just because people were not seeing them as much. So I feel that there's some change. You know, we went through this with the flounder. You know, why did across the whole Gulf did they kind of disappear for a little bit? Then they're starting to make their way back. There's so many things that we pretend like we don't have the answers. We don't. We're working at it as diligently as possible. We're looking at all these things. And again, some of that data coming from Dr. Powers, I think, will be helpful because, again, he sees that. He's on the Science and Statistical Committee for the Gulf Council, which is a very important role where they provide that scientific input. And so he is well aware of that stuff. So we're looking at that, you know, what, the why. Cobia, same thing. Sometimes they don't run the beach like they used to.
Yeah, but then again, there's been mixed bag. They don't run the beach, but then you can go catch them.
On the ships.
We've had good years where you catch them on the ships or catch them elsewhere.
And a little later than normal sometimes, like late last year, I had people come in and tell me they were catching them hand over fist at the ships, and they hadn't seen them all season. And that would be a little bit backwards from what we used to see. You know, used to get those May runs along the beach. You know, people at the towers would cruise up and down the beach. And that doesn't occur the same. Florida has the same challenge. They say the same thing. You don't see those cobia tournaments like you used to see. So, again, is it catch rate? Is it something else? The answer is, I don't really know.
Well, one thing, I don't believe it's the bait, because over in Louisiana where we fished a couple weeks ago, I mean, there's just schools of baits everywhere you looked. Just out in wide open water around every rig. I mean, there's just tons and tons of bait. So there's plenty of food for them. And why there's plenty of bait and not kings, I don't know. But the other thing is what you said about the commercial guys having to go further out. Well, we were out in, where normally we're in 100 to 160, 80 foot of water is what we normally fish in, maybe up to 200. We were out in like 300 and something foot of water, and that's where the kings were. They were out past that hypoxic water.
Yes.
Now, it was 300 foot of water around, but it was like a mountain, you know, where it came up to right at 200 foot. But that's where everybody caught the kings. The few kings that were caught in that really deep water. And that's past the hypoxic water.
And there's not the structure and the things that they hang around. Like, you know, again, historically in Alabama, you'd go to the rigs or you'd go to those reefs because they want to school where the bait are. They
that's
just
right.
like to be near that structure. And so that dynamic is a little bit different in the deeper water. So it's harder, I think, to get on those schools and find those schools. They say once you find the schools, they're there.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of can you find them.
All right. Coming right back, more with Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon, right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Sean Sullivan, Mike Ward, and our guest, Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. Always good to have him in studio, fresh off the Gulf Council meeting. So, got some things to talk about there. If you didn't catch it in the first segment, give or take, we should be able to fish snap for the rest of the year.
I mean, pretty close to the end of the year, yes.
With the numbers left, the quota left, we should be all right. And this is, if y'all didn't hear it earlier, too, this is, I don't know if it makes me feel better or worse. I really don't know. Because you said that y'all put the ROV down. You saw all the fish on this reef. You're out with Dr. Powers.
Yes.
Then y'all dropped. And you caught a few.
Yes. So I think it makes me feel better. The same as the regular angler. Is that
I'm going to tell the people on my boat that. So y'all listen to this story. And my fault. Listen. So they were out. So they're not bite. It's... You know, it is one of these things. I know that there are levers, right? So y'all are in the human management side. Dr.
Yes.
Powers then produced the science. Y'all implement it. And it is this question on snapper. Do you want – it's almost like stuff on land too. I mean, do you want just a few big ones or do you want a lot of smaller ones? Because it's going to be one or somewhere in between.
Correct. And that's a challenge because when we – first went into the state management mode, it was about trying to provide access, numbers of days for people to go fish. And so we knew, and we've talked on air before, that you would not catch those big fish anymore. You're going to get a lot of days. We had those short seasons. Fish got really big. They got really hungry. So now it is much, much more difficult to catch those bigger fish. Now, in that same research trip on the last stop, we probably caught an average of 7 or 8 pound fish.
Yeah,
so again, we didn't move that far. We did not change tactics, you know.
Yeah, because they don't on the science trip. No, you got to do it the same way.
The same.
Yeah.
So it's just an interesting dynamic sometimes. There is a lot of effort. There's a lot of hooks in the water. One of the challenges, and Mike and I were talking during the break, is sharks and the predators, the sharks and the dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do you get past that hump? So there's a couple of things. What we're asking anglers right now is if you're catching a legal-sized red snapper, go ahead and keep it. I know you may not be happy with, hey, I came back. There's four of us on the boat. We came back with 8 16-inch snapper. But
hey, throw me in that briar patch right now.
Correct.
Scott.
But if you throw but if you throw those back, and if you're saying, well, we saw the sharks and we saw the dolphins, well, then don't give those legal fish. Go ahead and just keep those.
Right.
The concern is that those discards are getting consumed by the predators. And so go ahead and keep those.
Building a habit.
You should really see those sizes begin to increase. Now, remember, we dropped down from 1 million pounds to the 664,000 pounds. This is our second year fishing that level. So that will help a little bit because we knew we were going to need to drop back from a million. I'm honest about that. I've been honest about that. We are pretty close to where we probably need to be on the private angler side.
Okay.
The for-hire side at the Gulf Council this week even talked about they're having trouble as well. And remember, for them, it's about how to make money, how to make people happy on these trips. So it's a concern for them. So they're saying the same things, that maybe we ought to look at how that season runs. Should we go ahead and shorten the season, just define the season? There's several different options out there so that you just say, this is the season. Take it or leave it when it comes to catching red snapper. And you try and leave as many fish in the water, and eventually that bubble will move, so to speak. That age class will change. You'll see those bigger fish start to show up in the system. And so it's a juggling act. You know, how do you spin the plates? And so right now, Alabama can only control that private angler side. I'm okay if we have quota left at the end of the year because those are fish that are left in the water. But I also want to make sure that we're providing the opportunities for people to go, and we're providing opportunities for those fish to grow.
Yeah, to me, that's the best world. Like if the season's open, so it's not a derby, okay, and we do this, and then we end the season still leaving quota on the table, I'm okay with that. You had the days to fish. You didn't catch them. I'm cool with that. I just don't want to be told I don't have the days to fish.
Correct.
Yeah.
Well, it's exactly what we've talked about for years is going on right now. We've just had a long enough season of snapper to see it implemented.
Sure.
It's going to be a lot of effort the first 2 or 3 weeks. Then it's going to gradually drop off. Probably the rodeo week's going to make it go back up.
Spike.
And then after rodeo, it's going to drastically go down. And then this time of year, you got everybody going back to school and football and all the sports going on. And
so the opportunity is there. It's whether or not you choose to set your priorities.
But the effort now goes way down. We've been saying, me and Sean have been talking about this for years and years. If they just open it up and leave it alone, you're going to see it kind of control itself. And we've been proven right.
Correct.
That's exactly what has happened.
Correct. Now that we've been through the calibration, we now have this quota at 664,000 pounds. And so there should be some consistency as we move forward. I want to consider, how do we look at that season where we still provide access, we still provide lots of opportunity, and you still give those more days? Do we open up this year at 4th of July week? We were open 7 days. Those middle days of the week don't really add much to the catch rate, because even if you're on vacation, you're still doing other things. You kind of spread that opportunity out. You look at the weather, pick the days you want to go. So we may
consider, opportunities there.
Correct. So we may consider opening more days. It doesn't mean there's going to be more effort. It's just more options on the table.
And if you closed it, let's just say Labor Day weekend, I promise you, no matter whether it's football, school, whatever, there's going to be more effort right here towards the end to try to catch the quota.
Sure,
you
but know? People see that now, that end date, they get anxious.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And I would probably do that. I'd probably go a couple times. But as it is right now, I may not even go back snapper fishing the rest of the season. Yep. More than likely, I won't.
So take the opportunity, you know, to go when you can, go when the weather's good. That's why the opening of this year, when the weather was bad and people chose not to go fishing, I was very thankful. That was the right decision.
That's
Do not put yourself in peril. Do not put your family in peril.
Because we've got plenty of time.
You'll have plenty of opportunities.
That's
Take a day here and there. Pick your weather days and go. And, you know, start looking at when other things are open. You know, when amberjack opens, when triggerfish is open, make those multi-species trips. A lot of people like doing that. We've seen an increase in some of our triggerfish landings, and Dr. Powers has shown that too. There's some that – the amberjack, that's a tricky one. Amberjack has been off and on for 30 years, but we are seeing some amberjack trips that are looking pretty good. So beeliner fishing, vermilion, whichever one you want to call it, has been positive lately.
Because you can't catch anything else hardly. Yes, you know, so every time
open.
I go, I try to catch a limit of beeliners,
and
you know?
I would prefer to clean beeliners.
Me too.
You guys have seen me clean fish, so you know, nobody wants me to clean
any fish. I just want to
catch
some beeliners.
Yes, catch some beeliners is a good one. So.
Yeah.
So you mentioned, to come back to what Mike had talked about, so with King Mackerel and being at the Gulf Council, this discussion, is there a lever to move on that the same way you move levers on snapper?
There is.
Because you're saying there's really not us catching too many kings. You can't fix it by saying, okay, we're closing King Mackerel fishing. So,
and there's also those of us who've been around a little longer than others, you've seen the cycles in hunting mm-hmm. and fishing. You know, one year you go, the squirrels are eating the wiring out of your attic, yep. and then the next year you can't find a squirrel.
Yeah.
Those type of things. It occurs in the fisheries world as well.
Next week, by the way, promote next week's show. We're going to talk about migratory birds, duck numbers in for this year. Ducks are big examples.
So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, big years, slow years, you know, yeah, they're not always the same.
So the fish does the same thing. So I'm looking at the King Mackerel issue a little more cautiously to let's find out what we don't know. You know, what was the change that made the numbers change in the King Mackerel? And again, I don't personally, Scott doesn't think it's effort. I don't think the data shows that it's effort. I think it's something else. And so
that's more challenging.
It's much more challenging. And so sometimes you just got to wait it out. You got to get more data, and how do you get that data? You know, are the studies different? Or is it going to show up in your current surveys that you do offshore, all the different things that go on offshore? Yes, no, maybe. And so that's the challenge of fisheries management versus, let's say, deer and duck management. The ducks you can fly over and you can get some counts.
Yeah.
You know, the deer you can see those movements and things. Those fish are a little sneakier sometimes, especially those migratories or coastal migratories, so coastal pelagics, you know, like the mackerel that move around Cobia.
Over on the Atlantic side, the King Mackerel are plentiful this year.
Yes.
They're having a banner year on the Atlantic side.
And they had a one-day red snapper season.
Yeah, they did. I remember that. And down at Key West, the King Mackerel are doing great. You know, they're catching plenty of them.
And just really
a banner year.
Exactly. So what is the difference?
Yeah.
Why are they still showing up there? Why are they not either coming close enough to shore here, or, you know, what is their travel pattern that has changed? It takes a smarter mind than mine. You guys know me. I am not the smart guy.
No,
I'm not the pretty guy. I'm just the guy who's willing to come talk about it.
We need to tag them, I think, and put some GPS tags on them, kind of like they did tarpon, because I'm going to tell you what I saw with tarpon, with tagging them,
was amazing
to me. It opened my eyes. I couldn't
believe.
Like,
we all thought we knew what they did.
Yeah. They're going out in 1,000 foot of water, 2,000 foot of water. Who would have thought that that's what they do? And then come back in to shore.
But then another one doesn't do that. Another one does what you think they do, and then another one goes out across the Gulf, and then another one does something in between the two.
Yeah.
The satellite tagging of things like Cobia and Amberjack are showing those same things. Like, I think Sean had an Amberjack recovered in South America. You know,
he's talking about Dr. Sean Powers,
Dr. Powers. And so,
in South America.
Yes. So,
what made that Amberjack? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to edit south.
And remember, and I said, I think they're in the wrong complex. We call that a reef fish. I said, when's the last time a reef fish swam that far? You know, so,
that is wild, isn't it?
The Cobia tagging, satellite tagging has been very intriguing. They're trying to do more of that. It's expensive, but it gives the most information
Absolutely.
In the shortest amount of time.
Absolutely.
And really, you start to see, you'll see these circular patterns with them. The tarpon are just phenomenal, how fast and how far that they go. Cobia, I think, range a little further and in different patterns. But again, Sean said it, some of them do what you think they do, and others do these random things. So I always say that I think if you don't think God has a sense of humor, he developed these fisheries things just to keep us guessing sometimes.
Yeah.
Coming right back, more with Scott Bannon from Alabama Marine Resources right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you here on this Saturday. And a reminder, too, it's not too many Saturdays from now. Actually, get started on a Friday, but we will be doing this show from the grounds at the G&D Farms Outdoor Expo. Get started Friday, September 13th through the 15th at the grounds. Tickets available online, GDFarmsOutdoorExpo.com, or go see Lee and the gang out at GND. Whether you go to the location here in Mobile or go up in Clark County, get
Grove
your tickets.
Hill.
Grove Hill, yeah. Get your tickets coming up, let's say, September 13th, 14th, and 15th. I'll do Midday Mobile out there on that Friday, and then we'll have a booth out there and do a show on that Saturday as well. So that's coming up. Exciting stuff.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Continue our conversation. Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. We've talked about, pelagics, some reef fish. I don't know what you call flounder. Inshore.
Good
inshore. But they go yes. offshore, too.
They do. They go, and there's, people that dive, they spear them offshore.
Yeah.
They get some big ones out there.
So this is one, when I heard you talking about, where populations are, there's a science component, obviously, but then you're at the same time, you're thinking about, okay, what am I seeing in my social media surveys or something
yes.
like that?
Mm-hmm.
Flounder has been one of those stories that the science is with us now, but even before science information came out, social media showed you that those changes made a difference.
Something has made a difference. And because my saying is, people don't post what they don't catch. So when you start seeing pictures of flounder showing back up, that is a positive indicator.
Mm-hmm.
And our data shows that flounder is moving in a positive direction. We have our program at the Claude Petit Mariculture Center where we release flounder. We're doing some genetics testing. Some of our staff, they're going to these fishing tournaments and getting fin clips from the flounder, and we'll run genetic testing.
So
on
you
those.
Better
ain't
do
science
that.
Amazing. I mean, science, yeah. It really is exciting.
So you'll see, what you'll be able to determine are the hatchery fish mixing with the wild fish. And again, there's a balance there. You don't want everything to you don't want it to be a put and take fishery.
No.
So
don't
so
end up like one of those trout streams
correct.
Up at Cherokee,
yes,
North Carolina.
We don't want that.
Where
so,
you
so
dump them in and you catch them out.
There's a certain balance there. So that's fascinating that we're going to go around and we're going to say, well, were those our mamas and daddies that came from Claude Petit? Are they the wild fish, which is good? Will we start seeing them in other states? That's what's going to be fascinating.
Now, I think we should charge the other states if they show up.
Oh,
they,
absolutely.
We should charge them
for
our flounder.
So I need every dollar I can. And then, so to shift gears on you for just a second, you talked to oysters earlier this week.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely. Lane Zerlot came by.
So
yeah.
Lane came by with our aquaculture farms. Again, I think you all talked about it. If you don't like one farm, try another farm. I'm a grilled oyster guy. I'm not a raw oyster guy, but gosh, those are good.
I'm an all oyster guy.
But
yeah.
We have our annual public reef oyster meeting. It will be on Tuesday the 27th at 1 o'clock at the Bilo Battery Community Center. Anybody is welcome to come. Generally, it's people that are local harvesters and our dealers, and we talk about what we anticipate for this year. I think you're going to see a similar season to last year, which is good. I had some concerns about our spat, the babies, and mm-hmm. we're seeing a little bit more of that. But it's just a good opportunity for us to get feedback from those guys and to share what we're seeing. And then probably about the beginning of October, sometimes that season will open up and there'll be Alabama wild caught oysters that will be in the market. And so people like to hear about that, go buy them by the sack kind mm-hmm. of thing. And it's important to the economy and it's important to our local community. And it's important. It keeps us on the map around the country. People, our aquaculture farms do a great job of keeping Alabama in that oyster market across the country. I
yeah.
travel a lot and I see them. And
it's proud stuff for me to see
is.
Our oysters.
It
elsewhere.
Is.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll brag about it and talk about it. Say, I know where that oyster came from. I've seen mm-hmm. where it lives, you know, mm-hmm. so. But yep, so we're looking forward to that season coming up. So there's a lot of good things going on here in South
So tell
Alabama.
Me, why is like the Murder Point oysters, the oyster shell doesn't look like a normal oyster shell. It looks totally
if Mike
different.
Mike would have only listened.
You didn't tune in on Thursday's show. But they tumble those. They handle those. Those are they, for lack of a term, they baby those oysters.
Yeah.
They are their children for that time period, those couple of months they're out there. So that changes the dynamic of the growing of that oyster. When they
okay.
tumble it and they chip those edges, it makes them smooth. And as Lane says, they learn to grow deeper instead of wider. And so that's why it's different than a wild
oyster. They take
oyster.
Them in, Mike, and take them off and tumble them and chip off the edges, like Scott said. And then the oyster finally figures out, I can't grow that way. And it starts growing, yeah,
that's
deeper.
Amazing to me. Yeah, I didn't get a chance to listen to Thursday's
yeah,
show.
Yeah, so
that's amazing.
And on the spat part of it, you know, you were talking about the wild spat, but with what he's doing, Mike, it's like running cattle. They're breeding they're selecting this oyster that does this and crossbreeding with this to get this kind of oyster out of it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like you would, you know,
like you do deer or whatever. Deer,
but I'm thinking cattle, my world. Yeah. You know, I'm going to take this, I'm going to crossbreed this. This bull's good. He's, you know, and low birth weight here, or, you know, get this, and with this heifer here, you know, this guy, and I'm going to make these.
The Dalton Island Sea Lab, they're even working on a program where they learn to be more resistant to predators, to like the crabs and the oyster drills by exposing them to that. And it's fascinating. And so those are not, you know, let's be careful of people who attack aquaculture things that, oh, you're genetically modifying. And you know, let's get away from that. These are very safe and healthy.
There's no chemical.
It's a selection.
It's not a chemical
It is
thing.
A breeding selection.
Right. I mean, like, you could say for cattle, you know, on line breeding, there's no chemical in it. I mean, people can talk about vaccines and stuff for cows, but I'm talking about line breeding. That's not chemicals. That's just saying you get to go, this boy gets to go with this girl, not with that other boy.
Yeah. And with oysters, you pick those that these oysters have grown in lower salinity, so they're going to thrive better in lower salinity. So if you have a farm or a location that has lower salinity, you want to use those, you know, so that their chance of survival is greater. So it's, again, it's science, it's trial and error. These guys work so hard, and the Alabama farms do such an amazing job of marketing, but also in just the production and the effort that they put into it. And so if somebody ever complains about the price of an oyster, they need to go volunteer and work on one of those farms for one day, and they will never, ever argue about paying for oysters again, because it's good. I'm so proud of what our farmers have done here in Alabama.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is.
I had no idea how they did that.
As a matter of fact, this afternoon I have a meeting with Mobile County Wildlife. We're having about 300 people come. We're having an oyster panel, and we're going to talk about oysters to a group that just trying to be informed.
Are there going to be samples?
I'm assuming there usually is. Whenever there's an oyster meeting, somebody has samples.
Okay, so I can drive you to this.
I can drive you
to the meeting. You need a driver to go there. I can help you out. Yeah, it's interesting to think, too, like the projects we've talked about in the past with and they've been in the conversation a good bit lately with expanding, for example, the Dolphin Island Causeway and putting that back in, putting that extra land in there. And then off of where it meets the water, the idea would be that would be good oyster habitat, right?
Absolutely. Yes.
So there'll be an expansion eventually.
So those
of the acreage that people
they're
can go
make
wild
those,
harvest.
If you've seen Lightning Point Park down in Bilo Battery, when they redid that shoreline, it's absolutely amazing how they did the grasses and the tidal creeks. So that shoreline project will have similar properties. And then all of that rock along there will become oyster habitat.
Mm-hmm.
And when they
because they got to grip to something.
Correct. They
and
have to.
If they don't have other oysters to grip to, they
and at the very southern end, when they were creating those little channels for the barges to get in, they unearthed shell that I don't know how old that shell is. It was several feet underground, so that shell is now back on top, and they're going to just let the wave action move that around. So it's kind of a shell plant right there at the south end of that. It's in a great location. Those rocks are going to catch spat. We're working on, we have about $7 million to work on projects, and it's connectivity of oyster reefs is really what we're doing. How do we strategically get these reefs in areas where they're going to, the spat
where the current will go from this reef over to that reef?
And there's lots of modeling out there. We're going to engage our academic institutions.
That's cool.
So it's there's a lot of good stuff going on in that. Again, you guys have talked earlier this week about things like water quality, and then, of course, you know, we like to eat them as well and all those things. And all the critters like to eat them. They're the foundational critter out there. So everybody needs oysters in the system. So there's a lot of positive. That shoreline project, I think, is going to be amazing for our oyster reefs. That you think about the amount of square footage that was added with, I call it nooks and crannies. That's not a science term.
No, it's one I understand, though. Yeah.
But that keeps the black drum from getting in there, getting their big heads in there and eating them. They can tuck in. So those producers will be hidden in those rocks.
And the
predators can't get to them. And so they'll be producing. That'll become a nursery area, basically, because those rocks will be filled with oysters. And we're working with Alabama Wildlife Federation to do they're growing some oysters, and they're going to plant them in an area. We'll talk about that later.
Okay.
And where those are going to go and how that's going to potentially help another project and help enhance that project. And so you'll have water quality, you'll help with the fishing. Lane mentioned earlier in the week that they love to fish around those oyster farms. Well, you also fish over oyster reefs. So you really, everybody benefits from having a healthy oyster reef system.
There was one other thing we were talking about on the causeway. There's supposed to be a boat ramp down there, right?
Yes, Mobile County.
What's the process on that?
So Mobile County's working on that. We are working with Mobile County. They're using GOMESA funds given to them by the governor to design a boat ramp on the east side of the road across from the Cedar Point Fishing Pier. So it's not the ideal location because of the weather, but they're going to do a jetty. It'll be protected.
Like a breakwater there?
There's going to be a breakwater there. Okay. We're working on the parking, the ramp design. And so that's going to help. Anybody that fishes in that area, that's going to be extremely helpful. It's going to be helpful during oyster season when we have all mm-hmm. these boats and help with the traffic congestion and those kind of things. It's I want to say the numbers of parking spots is probably going to be around 40.
Okay.
But remember, every few that you do, it eliminates pressure on Dolphin
mm-hmm.
Island.
Oh, absolutely.
Bila Batteries project, Mobile County is working on that, should start within hopefully the next few months, next year. And so the amount of traffic going out of the Bila Battery ramp right now is tremendous. On a weekend, there's 60 trailers.
Well, that's what I'm about to say. Man. So, but anecdotally, so I'm just one person. It doesn't mean it's science or anything. I have used Billy Goat Hole one time this year.
Good, because there's other options.
Right, that's what I'm saying, because I've gone to three other launches.
Thank you.
You know, so it has.
The mayor thanks you.
Yeah. Coming right back.
Thank you.
More of FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Y'all stay there. Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Glad to have you along. Captain Mike Ward of the Kingfish Search.
Yeah, we're still looking.
And Sean Sullivan of Let Me Find a Limited 16-Inch Snapper. I'll be happy. And coming up next week as well on the show, we'll be shifting gears a little bit to the land side, talking about dove season coming up. Also looking at the duck numbers for this coming year. All that coming up on next week's show. Right now we're talking fish with Director of Alabama Marine Resources, Scott Bannon. We covered a lot of species here, but one that's a favorite of so many of us out there, speckled trout. We talked about how flounder have come back. Have y'all had any metrics on since the changes for trout?
No, not really. We'll do an evaluation of it. We're kind of in that time period. We did the flounder because the flounder was so critical and so mm-hmm. important. And also the flounder has a commercial component. And, mm-hmm. and again, that's the livelihood of folks that are in our community. So we're going to be looking at that. We're going to have, again, some meetings probably this fall to talk to the public about that. Trout seems to be pretty stable. And again, the angler surveys show that when we look at the landings, the trout seems pretty stable. The changes that we implemented a few years ago, some of the, I'm using the air quotes here, you can't see it on the radio, the old school anglers had already instituted mm-hmm. some of these rules on their boats, which was actually very interesting to see.
I had some disagreements with the limit, the numbers, but the not keeping big fish, gosh, so many of us had already done that. I mean, just,
absolutely.
If that mama fish produces a whole bunch of babies, it's just better to turn her back. It just made sense.
And they don't eat as good.
So that right. that was a much easier change than I would have mm-hmm. thought initially. And so again, I think the benefit of that is we do continue to see a little bit of increase in fishing license every year. Hunting licenses unfortunately seem to go down, but you know, access is a lot harder these days. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that. We want people to go fishing. We're trying to provide access. So we've seen a little bit of uptick. So that means there's more hooks in the water. So mm-hmm. so if your numbers and your landings are still comfortable, knowing that you've had an increase in anglers, then that's still a good thing. That means the mm-hmm. system is working.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't had the habitat loss of the Mobile County Shoreline Project will actually increase some habitat because of the tidal marsh stuff that'll show up right there. There's some other projects. There was a project down at Dolphin Island, the Graveline Bay, where they kind of mm-hmm. increased some marsh down there. And you're creating these areas that those fish like to live and hang out, and they can run and hide a little bit and stay safe. That's always important. So I think our trout population is in good shape. We're going to have some discussions about red drum. We're going to have some public meetings this fall and talk about a lot of concern from anglers about the big bull drum that they're not seeing as many and some things like that. And so maybe we might make some changes.
Okay, but there's one. This goes back to that king mackerel discussion. And I don't know what's out there, but yeah, there are, I guess, tourists and people that kill a lot of bull redfish, I guess. But locally, I just don't.
No,
I don't see it, you know. So I wonder how much of that, because we've had these fish kill events.
So the fish kill events also could play a role, because those were schooling fish. Those were breeding age fish.
Yeah, you get that big school bull reds.
And those, that weird weather anomaly is basically what caused those fish kills. We had them about 2 or 3 years in a row, and they were large numbers of fish. It was a little disheartening. So that impacts age classes, because, you know, those
there's fish, like a hole in the age classes there.
Red drum are relatively resident, you know, so they're going to come and go and stay here. So that has an impact on that local population. So when you take out thousands of fish, in addition to your regular hook and line that you already have,
thousands of breeder fish,
breeder size fish. And so that does have an impact. So you're not going to stop that unique weather anomaly is going to occur again. You know, you're going to get the tide cycle just right. You're going to get that weather from offshore, those different mixing things that cause that layer of water to lose that oxygen at the level that those fish at that age, when they're schooling like that, they can't survive. It's a unique thing. It's almost like, you know, you talked earlier in the week about the Jubilees. You know, it's just a very, very unique event, and we don't want to see it, but we know that potentially it happens again. So you kind of have to, how do you adjust for that? You know, there's some things we can do with the bull reds that I think most anglers would be fine with.
Is there a significant hook and line harvest of bull reds anymore?
I don't think so in general. Some people, they can't help themselves. You know, it's a big fish. I don't know what you're keeping it for.
I don't know either.
But you know, we don't encourage you to keep that fish. It's you know, we do have the one oversized. And again, maybe if you get that one that's 30 inches instead of, you know, it's just over the slot.
One is 27 and a half or something. Yeah.
So that's fine. But those big bull reds, they are there is nobody that I know in our area that really wants to keep those. But occasionally they do. And the charter guys, you know, they're going to get a customer once in a while that wants to keep that. And I think a lot of them discourage it. They're like, just catch it. Have fun.
Well, we'll take a bunch of pictures.
Amazing. Yeah. You know, go take a nap when you're done reeling that thing in. But again, each person is different. But you know, potentially that has an impact. So we do have a concern for them, again, because of the effort. And you do get those anomaly events. But I still think our red drum, our trout populations are fairly stable. We're going to talk about sheep's head. I do have a little bit of a concern about sheep's head, because just the popularity and targeting sheep's head has grown immensely over the last couple of years. Nothing major. We just kind of want to consider some things to be a little bit preemptive, so we don't have to make drastic change. You know, let's try and get ahead of the game on some things. I tell people all the time, I have a concern for triple tail. I don't have the information to back that up, but the amount of triple tail that people are catching.
Well, I was about to say, you said sheep's head getting popular. The Facebook effect on sheep's head, but on blackfish or triple tail more.
Blackfish is they. You used to be kind of the unicorn person who caught you caught a blackfish, like, where? I'm not telling you. How? Yeah. I'm not telling you.
Yeah. Go away.
And then social media popped up, and now everybody tells everybody. Yeah. And so they're a very fast growing fish. We're working with again Dr. Powers and looking at some data. The Gulf States Marine Fisheries Commission has done some tagging, and so we'll look at some of that. Well, their movements, believe it or not, a lot of them will move a lot further than you think.
It's some of the stuff that came back is crazy.
Sargasm grass is important. I wanted that big push of sargasm grass that they were griping about on the beaches in South Florida. I said, bring it.
I thought we were going to get
and
the
it
big
didn't make it, but so, well, as so always, a lot to talk about.
I appreciate you talking about it with us. Come back and see us soon.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you,
Scott.
Guys.
All right. Director Scott Bannon, our guest right here on FM Talk 106.5 Outdoors. Do it all again next week. For Mike Ward, Sean Sullivan. Thanks, y'all.